We've talked about the importance of being a first follower, the value and necessity of servant leadership, what it means to be mentored and to mentor others. And today we're going to wrap up the series by talking about courage, and specifically heroism as a form of courage, and what that could do in our path of following Jesus. And I don't think I can give you this sermon, honestly, without talking about my background with heroes. And I was somewhat like Caleb Fitzgerald as a kid. You might have seen him running around the church in a Spider-Man outfit. I think I did that same thing, except with a Superman outfit. But I can only wish I was running around in this community when I was doing that, because I wasn't. Actually, I was doing something a little bit different. We had a tradition at our school. There were preschoolers in the class. It was called St. John's. The school was called St. John's. And then there were fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. So not first, second, and third. Not, you know, the nice little kids, still learning lessons, still wanting to be, like, good people. But people that were learning meanness. People that were learning how to be kind of snarky and picking on people. That was kind of like what they were doing in class. It might have been what the teachers were actually teaching them. So this was fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. This was the big leagues. And they had the preschoolers there as well. So during Halloween, we all dressed up, and what did they have us do? We didn't, you know, have treats in our own room, but we had to parade around the school, these different classrooms, the fourth grade classroom, the fifth grade classroom, and also the sixth grade. And we had to kind of just walk around and show that we're dressed up and we're in our outfit. So, you know, I was in my favorite outfit, my Superman one. And there's just one thing I haven't told you about this outfit. It's not anything big, it's not a big deal. But this outfit also doubled as pajamas. You know, that's reasonable, right? You know, my parents were savvy consumers, so they said, let's get pajamas and then also a costume. It's great, you know? He can go to sleep in them, and then if there's ever a costume party, he can just do that. Well, I thought that was a good idea. And it might have looked something like this. No, that's not me, if you could guess. So I wore my Superman outfit for Halloween. That's what I decided to do. I thought it would be a great idea. But apparently the sixth graders didn't think so, and they kind of found out, I don't know exactly how. They're like, wait, is that kid wearing pajamas? Oh, it's the pajama kid, Then all this teasing started. And I was just like, no, I'm Superman. Superman's supposed to be like tough and strong and like he can fly around. Like, why would people ever make fun of him? But they weren't really making fun of Superman as much as they were making fun of me. So I didn't really feel like the world's strongest man. But as you might be able to tell, you know, I still haven't given up on my love for Superman, because I think, you know, I've been still wearing some things, if you couldn't see through. Yeah, I'm still a fan. My dad actually got me that this weekend. He didn't even know I was preaching on it, so pretty cool. And I still wear the shirt, and I still really like Superman. And if you'd like to talk afterwards at the back, I will tell you why Superman is the best superhero ever. Even better than Batman. So maybe this is why I like superheroes, or any old hero. It's about being protected, and in that moment of ridicule, I could imagine a superhero defending me, and then going on an adventure that would put those sixth graders to shame. I could also imagine support and strength for pursuing the greater good of the world. And I could even imagine a superhero helping me in my own time of need, and even going on an adventure where I could help others. I admired their courage, I appreciated their journey, and I just thought they were playing cool. And I saw a hero as this, someone on a mission to transform, even save, the neighborhood, the city, or the world, maybe all three at the same time. But if we're thinking about how heroism might help us pursue faith in Jesus, then we should probably talk about the problems of heroism, because there are some, and the harms. I think that'd be a helpful thing to do. So the first thing might have already happened. You heard I was preaching on heroism, and you said, I'm just not a hero. You kind of disqualified yourself. You said, that's not me, that's not who I am. Yeah, I'm probably just gonna sleep for these however so little minutes. I'm just not that. And I think something about heroism, even the strength of the word, can make certain people push back. But I wanna say, let's consider that. Let's consider what it means to be a hero and how we can be ordinary heroes. It's something where we want everyone to be playing the game. So heroism is a risky concept because certain people will just sit out. And I think this leads to the second cautionary note. And one of the main goals of a hero story is to make you care about the hero. You want to be invested in their story. You want to know about their loves, their hates. You want to know about the journey. And that makes us focus on one. You notice most hero films, like there's some that have a few heroes together, but usually it's about one person. And because of that, we kind of see that a hero is usually a majority culture male. And that's usually like who the hero is. And they have a love interest, it's a woman. And if there's any other friends, they might be from different backgrounds, but sometimes they're not even sort of in the film. And they're just like kind of the best friend character. And so I just wanted to maybe just do a little experiment. These are the top six movies of the last year. And these are the heroes of them. You see Avatar, Wolverine, you got Twilight. And I know some people, I haven't read Twilight, but they switch Bella in for Edward here. You can do that. You'll still see five out of six being male. Shia LaBeouf from Transformers, Harry Potter, and Star Trek. So kind of look alike, got a blue person, cool. And here's their love interest. Again, another blue person, so blue pride, blue representation over there. But they kind of look alike, there's kind of something similar. And so because we're told to like model ourselves off of heroes in some ways, I wonder if there's a way that people, again, could disqualify themselves. You know, I really don't look like these heroes, I'm not asked to sort of be in the movie in that way. So I think that there's a little bit of a danger there. Also, we've got the lone hero syndrome. I'm not gonna go too detailed into this, but you probably recognize it. Sort of the hero is someone who has the burden of the world on their shoulder. So because of that, they can't get too close to anyone. You know, the girl that they like and the girl that likes them back, they just can't fall in love. If you watch Spider-Man 2, you know, this is kind of like the plot for that movie. There's just something holding them back. You know, if I told her, then she'd be in trouble and she could get killed, and I just can't do that. Something I find a little bit patronizing to the woman. And not really letting like there be a partnership at all. So we could go it alone. I still think that's a danger. And then also, there's just the simple fact that people worship the hero instead of modeling themselves after it. And then on a practical note, we don't really know if the hero is doing good anyway. Who's to say that? And we're kind of talking about fictional heroes, but we know that there are heroes that people will really like, national heroes. And someone's national hero might be someone else's sort of oppressor. So there's a good question there. When we valorize someone, do we really know their actions are good? So after all of that, why am I even giving a sermon on heroism? And I think it's simple for me. If the world is broken, and I think that it is, and I think you all might agree, then we have to realize that ordinary acts of service and love will always take courage, because the world in some way will be against them. If there's brokenness around, if we try to do something that would pursue love, we're gonna face opposition, and because of that, we'll need to be, I think, heroes. We'll need to be ordinary heroes. And I think as long as we have a need in the world, we'll see that there's kind of an affection for them, and also people that are really hungering for heroes to show up in their everyday lives. And this can start really small and still demand something of epic proportions, of heroic proportions. So when several of us got together to talk about the New Haven community and ECV community dialogues, we were thinking about what would make a friendlier New Haven, because that's something that we thought of. We didn't see New Haven necessarily as a friendly city. We said, that's something that's good, we want that. How could we do that? And one of the things we said right away was, wait, have you experienced someone in New Haven actually smiling at you? Like, have you had an experience where someone is smiling and is friendly, and you have a good interaction that way, just with a stranger? And I think a lot of us said, no, we haven't. And that was something that we wanted. And maybe the first heroic thing we can do is just smile at one another. It sounds really small, but I think if we try to do that to everyone, we'd see that would be a little bit scary. To everyone, smile. And if you don't like smiling, then just be pleasant. Just start there. Could we do that? Or is that even an act of ordinary heroism? And I think for some of us, you know, we'd say it's normal. If we're from maybe the Midwest, like me, we'd say actually smiling at someone is something that you should do. But I think we'll see that ordinary heroism depends on where you are, depends on who's in front of you. And I think this is what we're after at ECV. We're not after being sort of big shots or being the lone hero, but I think we are after being a church of ordinary heroes. So we're gonna look at the book of Luke, an ancient account of Jesus' life, to see some of this ordinary heroism in action. And this is from Luke. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked what was happening. They told him, Jesus of Nazareth is passing by. He called out, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Those who led the way rebuked him and told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and ordered the man to be brought to him. When he came near, Jesus asked him, what do you want me to do for you? Lord, I want to see, he replied. Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has healed you." Immediately, he received his sight and followed Jesus, praising God. When all the people saw it, they praised God. And this is a passage in the middle of Jesus' ministry. He's gone around the Holy Land, preaching good news to the poor, giving sight to the blind, and that's what he does here. It's something that people were used to. So he was known as a man of God, a man of power, a man of intrigue, depending on your persuasion, depending on how you saw Jesus. So do people see any heroism here? So I'm gonna kind of leave the obvious one for the end and start with the blind beggar. And the man has at least two strikes against him. He's blind and he's a beggar. His disability is pronounced even with how he has to depend on others to know that Jesus is even there. He has to ask them, "Wait, why is there a commotion? Who's here?" Jesus is here. And I wonder if his dependency on others helped him in this case. This man seems like he's been blind for a significant amount of time, probably resulting in him falling down the social ladder. He couldn't work, probably, so now he's poor. He's not just a blind man, but he's a beggar. He's relying on others, not only for money, but also to know what's going on around him, to see his surroundings. This type of humility makes him a ready candidate for someone who is bold and courageous enough to shout out their need, to say, "I'm blind and I need to be healed. I want to see." He's even rebuked and silenced by the crowd. They actually try to shut him up, but that doesn't matter. He's after something, he's after his healing. And what we might read is an extraordinary act, and I think it is sort of extraordinary, I think it's just a habit to him. He asks people for things. He receives help because of a disability. It's not a surprise for him to say, "I need to see what's going on." He's used to being humble. He's used to asking for help. And with Jesus, he doesn't act differently, except that in this case, he's asking Jesus. You know, an ordinary thing becomes extraordinary when Jesus is involved. He's asking for his actual sight. And his ordinary heroism has become, you know, all at once, extraordinary. He confesses his area of need. He asks him, Jesus, to heal in mercy, not as a demand. And then he expresses once again his desire. "I want to see. I want to be healed." And at the point of the heroic act, his healing, the man actually starts a heroic journey of following Jesus. So if we see Jesus as someone who's doing a heroic act, we see the blind beggar as someone who's starting a journey with Jesus. He's actually following him. So he just got his sight, and the thing he wants to do is follow Jesus. He wants to see more of Jesus, more of what he's doing, like actually see with his own two eyes, because that's a reality now. And the thing that was so strange for him has actually become quite ordinary, and it's going to be ordinary for the rest of his life. We're all looking at something right now. That's an ordinary thing, but for him, that was exactly what he needed. All of this transforms a once hateful crowd into a crowd that's now praising God. So they were ignoring him, they were kind of rebuking him, and now they're praising God. That's strange, but that's what's happening. And I think it's a safe bet that we'll also see Jesus as a hero in this passage. He's fulfilling a need in a miraculous way. Like a certain sort of superhero, Jesus is not overwhelmingly thrilled by this heroic act. It's just something he does. This is Jesus' everyday life. It's what he also wants to make ordinary, not only for himself, but for us. What if I wanted to make ordinary in my life, and where in my life was I blind, and what did I want to become so regular that it would be like plain sight? I think for me in this season, it's been a prayer life. Oops. And so it's a weird phrase. I always kind of thought it was just a religious phrase, but here's what I think it means. I think it means you have a life with God, where you can remember the last time you spoke with him, just like any other friend. You kind of remember the conversation, you remember the location. It's familiar. It's not just like a time where you're just throwing up prayers and just kind of wanting God to help you in need and then kind of forgetting that, but a time where you're regularly pursuing God in prayer. You're regularly asking for his help and his guidance. I think it's a relationship where there's increasing trust and vulnerability. You're showing God who you really are. And even though God already knows, I think there's an appreciation there for trying to kind of take away our shells and say, "This is who I am, and this is the help I want. This is who you've created me to be. This is what I'm going through. Do you still see me? Do you still love me? Will you still be here?" And then hearing an overwhelming yes from God. And I think this is life-giving. This isn't an obligation. It's not a rule-based thing. It's something that you'd actually want to do, that we'd be people who'd want to pursue prayer. I think it's also a time where we're hearing God, we're speaking to him, but we're also having some sort of conversational element. It doesn't mean there's always words or that it's always exact, but I think it does mean that we feel like there's a response. even if there's no words at all. We feel like God is responding to our prayers, like there's some activity there. And lastly, I think it's a space for transformation, that God's transformative power enters into our prayer, that we'll actually be changed because we're spending time with the living God. And if he created the universe, when we spend time with him, shouldn't we be changed as well? I think so, and that's what I was after, that's what I wanted. And why did I want this? I think that's a really great and crucial question. And I think my biggest motivation has been, I've only seen Jesus do good things in people's lives. I've only seen Jesus be a good thing in people's lives and in my life. That's it, just good. And I'm not talking about Christianity, I'm not talking about religion, I'm not talking about Christians, I'm talking about Jesus. He's always been good. And if that's true, then praying to him is probably one of the most valuable things, if not the most valuable thing I can do. And thus the challenge began. And I think with us, there's sort of a tendency that when we want to do something good, we expect it not to really take that much work. You know, it's a good desire, I want to do this, so it's going to be easy, right? And then when it's not, we kind of have a hard time pushing our will into it, maybe wanting to do it and setting up some type of habit, not a rule at all, but just a way that we say, maybe it's okay that my will is against this, maybe it's still good, maybe it won't come easy to me. And from a secular and religious point of view, it can seem strange that we'd have to work at that if God's all-powerful anyway, and if there's grace. It seems confusing, but in my experience, it's what's happened. And just like the middle of most hero tales, I think the landscape of the world has changed. It went from being an idyllic paradise to a place where there's actually evil, where it's a struggle. And I think that's where this sort of resistance comes from. It makes sense that in a broken world, if we try to do something good, there's going to be pushback against that. We're not gonna go backwards at first. We're gonna have to move forward, to keep moving forward. And I think that's because of the reality of evil, but that's a whole different sermon. So I just remember getting up earlier. That's what I decided to do. The morning isn't holier than the night, but I just decided I might have a little bit more energy then. Not that much, but still just a little bit more than the nighttime when I was just kind of tired. And I remember just laying down on the ground and just trying to pray. And I got maybe like 2 minutes in. I was like, God, this is hard. Like, this is really hard. Like, this is tough. I just need you to give me focus. And I did that for about 2 days. And then I just said, God, like, we've got to talk about this. This is something, that I want to do, but I need your help. So even though I was trying to pray to God, I was also asking God to help me. And I remember distinctly asking that day, so, like, what should I do? And I felt I heard back, just lay down and try to think about me, just try to think of me and pray to me. And then I remember asking, I think, a pretty important question. Jesus, what happens if I fall asleep? And then hearing back, that's okay. Like, don't worry about it. Just try. If you need rest, then take it. And that was so liberating to me, to realize that in this act of prayer, I could actually seek help with praying. Like, I didn't have to just act like I was trying to pray without my relationship with God being included. I can actually say, God, I'm actually struggling with this. Like, I'm struggling with praying. Can you help me? I could name the very thing I was trying to do, and that could help me. That could make it better. And even knowing that Jesus was allowing me to sleep in my prayer time was pretty liberating. That was pretty awesome. I don't think I took advantage of that, but I was definitely comforted by it. So what started from that point was a slow, super slow journey of learning to like God's presence enough that I stayed awake. And it was learning to receive from God. If you've noticed, a lot of the things we talk about at Elm City Vineyard require this receiving of God. I think we're encouraged to receive, whether it's God's love, whether it's God's power, whether it's God's justice. There's something that God is doing that we can receive. But I think there's blockages that happen. There's ways that we need help. And we can seek help. And for me, one of the things I wanted to feel more was just God's love inside of me and God's spirit. And I think there are ways, again, through the world where we might be conditioned to not want that, whether it's through bad experiences with relationships, just ways that we might be hurt and we need to be healed and then to open up so we can actually receive what God wants to do in our lives. And that's what I wanted, and that's what I saw starting to happen. And it's not anything close to a mastery at all. I don't think that's what we're after. We're not out to master prayer. But I have seen some changes. I feel like I want to pray more. I notice when I don't pray. I feel like God's made sort of our communication easier outside of this sort of dedicated time of prayer, just because I've already sort of been in the prayer space before, so I can continue doing what I was already doing before. And I saw change happen as I was praying for myself and for others. What are some of those things? Give me the good stuff. Tell me what's happening. Okay. I began to recognize God's spirit and God's pleasure as I prayed and as I prayed for others. I was able to call on that in just times of frustration or tiredness or times where I wasn't motivated. And I actually saw God's spirit kind of come alive in me. I saw kind of a second wave of energy come. There was a friend that was praying for a reconciliation with me. And it was weird. I could kind of sense that this friend was praying for me. I felt like because I had spent time with God, I kind of knew what was happening. And I never really felt that before. I knew people had prayed for me, but I could never feel like, oh, wait, I think this person might be praying for our friendship. It seems like things are changing. But I was able to sense that. And lastly, I've prayed for opportunities to pray for people. I've prayed for opportunities to share God's love. And the last one took place Thursday on an airplane. And it's funny how we sing songs, things like, God, let me have your heart, or break my heart for what breaks yours, or let me share your love with people. And then it actually happens. Like the songs that we sing, the prayers that we pray, they actually like come true. I'm not sure if we're expecting them. We realize that we have to like pray again because what we prayed for, it was a pretty powerful experience. It actually would change us if that happened. And it's tough. So I'm on the plane, I look up for my book, and I see this guy looks pretty friendly. Usually I don't sit next to friendly people. I sit next to grumpy people. I sit next to people that fall asleep. I sit next to people who just don't look at me at all. But this guy's super talkative, and he just sits down. I'm like, okay, well, let's start talking. And so we start talking about Indianapolis and how the city's changed. And the plane isn't even off the runway at all. Like, we have like a full conversation. And so I'm like, okay, God, what are you doing here? I think you might be doing something. And so then I just feel my left hand get a little bit warm. And I'm like, oh no, like what's happening here? And so then instantly, seriously, like his mouth opened and was like, I just have this back pain. There's just like this, like, feels like a fist is just like going up my back. And I was like, no. Like that was my response. I'm like, whoa, like so faithless. But then I remembered like, wait, I prayed for this to happen. Like, why would I respond no when I actually prayed for this very opportunity? So I was like, okay, like, God, like, help me out here. I'm scared. I'm afraid. Like, what do I do? I just felt like he definitely said, just, you know, you're having a good interaction. You're having a good conversation. Like, that's good. And if you want to pray, go for it. I'll give you courage. I'll give you my strength. So I was like, okay, I can go with this. We continue talking. And when you know that you're going to do something like pray for someone, I guess it's because we think it's like a holy activity. You're kind of like watching what you're talking about or just thinking about it at least. So we're talking about like Will Ferrell movies. We're talking about just like the craziest things. I'm like, could this even be like in the gospel? Like, because it's not like a reverent joke. It's not like bad. We're just talking about like silly things. And so I'm just kind of like, God, like, what are you doing? And so again, we haven't even taken off. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to pray for him before we take off, because the stewardess is just gonna like be scared, like I might get in trouble, like I wanna go home, I can see my mom, like I really wanna do that, so I'm not gonna do that. And so then I was like, okay, then she's gonna go and give the water to all of us, no food, because this is a cheap flight, so it's just water. And I was like, okay, that's cool, like living water, everyone's having it, it can maybe use this like symbol to like encourage me, you know, just really get revved up to pray. So I decided to do that, knowing that we're gonna have maybe 10 to 15 minutes before the plane lands. So we get the water. I'm just like, so when did you have that back injury? When did it start? And he tells me, and I just say, hey, can I pray for you? And so I have a little, so something is a little bit different with my story in just that I'm going to divinity school. So people already know if they've asked me what I do, that I think they'll probably think because I'm going to divinity school, like I believe in God. And I said I wanted to be a pastor. So we knew some things. So I was just, hey, can I pray for you? And he's like, oh, okay. And so I knew instantly, like, okay, this is gonna be an awkward prayer. This is gonna be a long ministry time. This is gonna be like a Jesus, like, heal him, and then we'll see what happens. And so that's what it was. I just said, hey, Jesus, can you just heal the pain in his back? Can you just help him feel better? Can you just encourage him? In Jesus' name, amen. He was just like, thanks so much. Thank you for that. He was like, super awkward. I was like, I'm not even sure if we can do like a post-interview wrap-up. And so like, we didn't. I don't know what happened. Maybe he's healed, maybe he's not. But what I do know, and I really do know this, is I think he had a really positive interaction with someone of faith, with someone who is willing to pray for healing. And he said, thank you. He said that, you know, that was a good thing for him. And so that was just the small act. And I don't want to consider that heroism, but that's what happened. And I think these small acts, whether we call them ordinary heroism or not, I think are really what we're being encouraged to do as a church at Elm City Vineyard. And I think it's actually what Jesus was really excited about. If you remember in the other story, Jesus didn't really show that much emotion. Like, hopefully he was smiling, like, yes, like, blind person, like, sees. But we don't really get that from the text. But one of the most joyous portraits of Jesus is after he sends the 72 disciples out. He sends them out to give peace on houses, to declare the kingdom near. for the disciples to receive the hospitality of strangers and for them to heal the sick. And recognizing their success, Jesus says this: "I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. I have given you authority," the disciples' authority, "to trample on snakes and scorpions and to overcome all the power of the enemy. Nothing will harm you. However, do not rejoice that the spirits submit to you, but rejoice that your names are written in heaven." At that time, Jesus, full of joy through the Holy Spirit, said, "I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to the little children. Yes, Father, for this was your good pleasure. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows who the Son is except the Father, and no one knows who the Father is except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him." Then he turned to his disciples and said privately, "Blessed are the eyes that see what you see. For I tell you, that many prophets and kings wanted to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear it." Isn't it strange that this is one of the most joyous times we see Jesus? It's him just proclaiming thanksgiving, and he didn't even do anything. All he did was send 72 out. But when they came back, having seen the power of God move, it was like everything changed. He was like a little kid. I'm not sure how you picture that, but I picture Jesus like a little kid, just thanking his dad for what's happening. Because I think this is all part of the plan. It's a plan of redemption. It's a plan of the kingdom coming. And not just through Jesus, but through us. That the Spirit will actually strengthen us. The Spirit will actually let us do miraculous acts. It'll actually let us be loving and compassionate. And Jesus is realizing that. It's not just me. It's not just what I can do teaching them as a physical body, but it's actually what my Spirit can do in them. That's how the world could be redeemed. That's pretty amazing. And it's weird that we're sort of the punchline of that. We're sort of the end of the argument. Like, it's us. Like, we're supposed to be doing these things. That's why Jesus came, is to empower us. So what do we want to make ordinary at Elm City Vineyard? Isn't that what's happening here? Jesus is asking his disciples, "Hey, that thing you just did when I sent you out, I want that to be ordinary. That's not extraordinary. That's not dramatic acts of heroism. That's every day for you. That's what I want you to do each and every day." So here, what do we want to be ordinary? What do we want to be a regular practice in this community, even if others might step in for the first time and see our acts as heroic? What do we ourselves want to see as just everyday ECV? I'm going to call this the New Haven hat trick. I think these three things are what we want to see happen. And I hope everyone has ideas, because it'd be great to talk about this stuff together. But here are just three ways I sense God doing that. And as you might have guessed, I'm pretty sure heroism is contextual. It depends on who you're speaking to, what community you're in, what is actually a heroic act. And it will depend really differently, you know, where we are. But I think for us, it's these things. I think the first is loving the marginalized. And I'm going to say contextually marginalized. Because when I go up to the Divinity School for a class, when I come downtown on this campus for a meeting in this area, when I see someone from Agape Homeless Church, I'm experiencing various different things. And in each person, there's a marginalized for them. There's someone they're marginalizing. There's a way that they feel marginalized. And I think for us, we have to kind of see that, see who's being marginalized, and to care for them, to love them. This might be someone who's liberal, it might be someone who's conservative, it might be someone who's poor, it might be someone who's rich. We're actually gonna have to listen to the Spirit. We're not gonna have to use fixed categories. We're gonna have to ask God, what are you doing? Who's vulnerable here? Who might need your help? Who's asking for your help? And I think this starts with something strange. I think it starts with language. New Haven's a town, if you've noticed, that is divided, and it's divided pretty specifically into sort of certain people. Certain people live over here, certain people live over there. And so I think with our language, we also divide. We speak in a certain way, and our tongues actually sort of categorize people. It says certain people live here, certain people live there. You're like this, you're like that. We don't leave room for originality. We don't leave room for the Spirit and what the Spirit's doing. So I think we actually might need to start with our language, to change our language, to make it be open, to make it seem like a person from New Hallville can do things we would only expect a person from Yale to do. and actually think maybe someone from Yale is from New Hallville. Maybe that's the flexibility we'll have to have with our language. We'll actually have to step into that. Because I think if we do that, we'll see more possibility for us to be in their lives, a way that we could actually serve them and love them. I think it just starts there. And the second is praying for God's encouragement and healing with friends and strangers. I think this is twofold. Like the blind beggar, I think God is calling us to become more vulnerable, to say what we're going through. There are many things that God would love to heal in us if we dared to name them. And we should do this with wisdom and with prayer, using trusted mentors and friends, but we must do it. We want to be healed. We want to be a healed community, seeking to heal others and seeking to always be healing parts of ourselves. Healing is waiting for us if we dare just to ask for it and pursue it. I think we're being encouraged to minister boldly to our friends, to strangers, to anyone, not thinking of it as an obligation. Because I think that we've realized around here, prayer actually transforms things. It changes us. And we've come to kind of see that as a fact. But I think we're really comfortable seeing that, you know, in ourselves, in the people that we already know. But isn't that true for everyone? Can't prayer to Jesus change everything about life with anyone? I think so. I think because of that, we're being encouraged to pray for others. And I think there's a way, too, that praying for something like healing, praying for someone prophetically, it lets us feel a little bit more distant to this world. As you saw from my story, it was awkward. It was strange. Like, it was a weird experience for me. But that actually makes me relate more to the marginalized, makes me relate more to the oppressed. I'm not normal anymore because I'm doing things that are weird, that are strange. And I think we're encouraged maybe to pursue what we might call the supernatural because of that. We won't feel like we're just kind of regular citizens in a broken world. We'll feel like we're people that have a God who actually breaks through that in pretty dramatic ways sometimes. And the last thing is related and very simple. God is calling us to live integrated lives. He's calling us to take these categories, these boxes that we have, and just collapse them, to break them down, and to live one life for one thing. And that's gonna mean various different things for us. It's gonna mean that we need to confess things to God, confess things to each other, just talk to people about our relationship with Jesus, wherever it's at, just to be honest. I think this will help us a lot in all of these ways. And I think we'll be helped and encouraged by actually praying to Jesus throughout all of this, by times of personal prayer where we're seeking God. And so that's ordinary heroism. And some of you might be longing for something more, thinking, aren't there dramatic problems in the world that we need to fix? Don't we need to be those sort of heroes? And I'm looking for those answers too, but I don't think we can differentiate the real from the fake. I don't think we can say, oh, these aren't the real things. You're asking us to smile at people. That's pretty small. I think we need to see them as connected, that they're related, that maybe the big things will come after some dedication at pursuing the small things. I think Jesus says a lot about that. We can become heroic in, you know, the little things of life and see God give us more opportunities for what we might deem as big or great. And as we enter into a time of communion, we'll see that even Jesus followed that model. Because of his obedience to God, miracles and great teaching, that was easy for him. But we believe in a God that struggled to die for us, that really went to prayer and deep searching with God to do what he did, to sacrifice for us, to be a hero to the point of his death. He knew it would be difficult. He knew it would be painful and embarrassing. He knew he would miss the communion of his Father, yet he decided to press into God's heart for all of us and to find strength in that and a reason for his actions. And he revealed that at the Last Supper, the night he was betrayed, when he took bread and broke it and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, after the supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me." Even before Jesus' death, he called us to remember ordinary heroism by committing to do the same with our lives. Today, let's commit to being ordinary heroes for God, whether that looks like naming your blindness and seeking healing, committing to serve and to love the marginalized, and even to follow Jesus for the very first time. Let's all come to celebrate the fruit from Jesus' sacrifice in communion.